evening and welcome to Mountain Bears. I'm Ace tonight, and of course with me tonight is the Cubby with the most, Tacky Joe. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you this evening?
Being evil is normal and getting lost in news stories that I cannot believe some of the crap's going on, and a lot of it we won't cover because, hello, we like TOS over here on YouTube. Hey, Spud, you can go eat a bucket of worms.
Hey, there is that. Hey, it gave me time, though. I was scrolling Facebook, and I had to message a friend of mine.
Okay.
All right, so ways you know you're old is when you remember someone having a kid.
Uh-huh.
And now you see that they, like, because it's that time of year where all the seniors start declaring what schools they're going to and what their major is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one of those situations. One of those kids is now going to college.
Right.
And I'm looking at the college, the major, and the, you know, now grown adult human.
Right.
And I, my thought that I had to share with a friend of mine was, does his mother know how much pot he smokes?
Because okay.
Some schools and majors, you just know, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, it was true 20-some years ago, and I'm sure it is true now.
Right.
Hey, Devin. Good Friday to you. Good Friday to you.
Good Friday. Hey, hello, Devin. Sorry we were late. I got to pre-reading a story. I went, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. He fell down a rabbit hole.
I fell down a let's confirm this is real hole.
Like, is this a fake article? Is this The Onion?
Yeah. Like, did they get scooped?
Well, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
All right. So what order are we going in tonight?
Well, I think we should take on first.
The one you fell down?
Yeah, let's start there and work our way up, shall we? Well, no. All we right. have to go up and then down.
Okay. Oh, so Devin was jamming to... Four in the Strange or Ivy in the Strange?
Ivy in the Strange.
Ivy in the Strange. Okay. I don't know these things. No one tells me things. To be fair, there's a fair number of artists I've listened to that I don't actually know what their name is.
Right.
Oh, it is Four in the Strange. See, I'm not totally irrelevant.
Okay.
I'm like, it could go one of two ways.
Yeah.
Oh, Hank Jr.'s grandson. Cool. No, like, there are artists that I don't know how the hell, like, I listen to their music, I like their music, but I don't know what the fuck their name is, because I don't know what the fuck that is supposed to be. Anywho, alright.
Yeah. Anyway. Like a bad boyfriend. Namely an ex one. George.
Well, yes. Yeah, George like a Santos desperate ex-boyfriend, George Santos, announces he's running for Congress again. Like, y'all may remember. Yeah, he was recently voted out.
Well, he was more than voted out. He was expelled from Congress. We have not gotten Marjorie Taylor, Lost the World, Moldy Green out of Congress, but George Santos got expelled. Okay. The man lied about everything. He even, mm-hmm. I personally think he even lied to get the gay vote. I want to see evidence.
Do you want to see the sex tape? Do you really?
Yes, his boyfriend's quite cute if it's actual.
Oh, God.
If not, I want his phone number. But anyhow, I cannot believe this dude. He was expelled from New York. He is now being, you know, he's now going, I'm going to the scout with an open mind and heart, believing that I can, with great ideas for the United States. He's going to try to run again, but he's going to probably have to take this up.
Okay.
To, like, after being expelled, he'll probably have to go to, like, I don't know, the Supreme Court to get a ruling.
Well, and he switched districts. Mm-hmm. Specifically so he could challenge Nick LaLota of New York's first congressional mm-hmm. district, who led the effort to expel him.
Right.
Can't tell me there's not sour grapes there.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Because he was previously representing New York's 3rd congressional district.
Yeah. Which we're seeing this a lot. Like, Marjorie Greene has changed districts too. Like, do we need to get a restraining order on you, Santos?
I don't know. I like it. Well, Lolota responds. To raise the standard in Congress and to hold a pathological liar who stole an election accountable, I led the charge to expel George Santos. If finishing the job requires beating him in a primary, count me in. So, much like the embattled former President Donald Trump, who is running.
Like, are we repeating 2024? Have we ran out of ideas?
Well, 2020 seems that way. Well, Santos faces a multitude of charges, including 23 felony charges, to which he has pled not guilty. A trial date has been set for September 9th, 2024, after the primary. He faces a maximum of 22 years in prison if convicted. Like, am I wrong here? How do you... I'd feel like I was wasting my vote.
You never waste a vote. Always vote.
Well, but, I mean, vote for someone who has a chance in hell of, you know, actually getting elected and sitting in office for 5 seconds without going to prison.
Or, you know, that's a good point there, you know. So maybe we got to look at the running mates. That's maybe a thing we need to look at, too, this time, is looking at the running mates and where they stand. Of course, we have to vote issue by issue, candidate by candidate, and if it's not clearly stated on the thing, ask them.
Yes. I don't know. I just... How are we here?
We're here because we have Republicans that are dying and Democrats that are lazy.
Yeah.
And all of them are collecting Social Security for multiple decades.
Well, you know. What I mean is, it used to be the slightest whiff of a scandal.
Mm-hmm.
The allegation you might have done something that was felonious.
Mm-hmm.
You're gone. You're done. Your career's over.
Right, but that was before our freaking government became reality TV.
This is true. This is true. I mean, I guess you get the government you vote for, so if this is the government you want, you have the opportunity to vote for it.
Please, no. Reality TV ratings are down. Let's replace most of Congress with someone 20 years younger.
You know, like
Gen Zs, Gen Xs, we need to get moving because these boomers are killing us.
I mean, guys, get out there and vote, please.
Please get out and vote. All right, so moving along, let's go and check out some news in Maryland. This one is in your private chat because I was debating on whether to cover it or not, but let's go for it.
All right, so founder of DC LGBTQ plus nonprofit Casa Ruby arrested in Maryland after fleeing to El Salvador. Interesting. So Ruby Corrado, the founder of Casa Ruby, a nonprofit that has provided services to homeless LGBTQ plus youth in Washington, D.C., was arrested in Maryland on charges of fraud and money laundering, federal authorities announced Wednesday. Corrado, 53, is accused of misappropriating at least $150,000 from more than $1.3 million in pandemic relief funds intended for the nonprofit. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia alleges that Corrado transferred these emergency relief funds to personal bank accounts in El Salvador and concealed the transactions from the IRS. Established in 2012, Casa Ruby has been a pivotal organization in the nation's capital, offering transitional housing and support services to LGBTQ youth. Corrado was celebrated in the community as a beacon of hope for transgender people and other marginalized individuals. The organization came under scrutiny after Corrado allegedly fled to El Salvador in 2022 following revelations of financial irregularities. D.C.'s Attorney General had gone after Corrado with a civil investigation that resulted in her organization's bank accounts being frozen after staff and vendors went unpaid. FBI agents arrested Corrado on Tuesday at a hotel in Laurel, Maryland, the Justice Department said. The charges against Corrado include bank fraud, wire fraud, and laundering of monetary instruments. If convicted, bank fraud carries a maximum sentence of 30 years in prison, while wire fraud and money laundering each carry up to 20 years.
So that's Corrado, 70.
Yeah, Corrado's arrest comes after Casa Ruby ceased operations in July 2022 amid allegations of failing to pay rent and employees, effectively shuttering its transitional housing and leaving numerous LGBTQ youth without support. The case has highlighted the importance of transparency and oversight in managing nonprofit organizations, particularly those serving vulnerable communities. Corrado is being held pending a detention hearing scheduled for Friday.
As they should be. I also, you know, and this is amid another case that me and you are very personally aware of with the embezzlement about within some LGD, like all this was occurring at the same time.
Here's the thing. I think, because this goes all the way back to like, 2003 for me,
right?
2004, somewhere in there. Literally having to go after a college student org, business manager over embezzlement.
Mm-hmm.
One, you don't even think of it as embezzlement when it first happens. You're just like, there's missing money. And then all of a sudden someone drops the words and goes, well, it's stealing from a business entity.
Mm-hmm.
That's embezzlement, not theft.
Right.
That whole different situation. There's petty theft and then there's embezzlement. This is embezzlement. Welcome. Right. It's a whole different world. The thing is with nonprofits especially, and especially small nonprofits, it becomes very easy for money to end up in the wrong hands. You're mm-hmm. very reliant on people that volunteer to work with you, that create organizations that are there. Mm. Sometimes it's not even intentional embezzlement. Sometimes it's not even intentional mismanagement.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lack of ability. It's long been said nonprofits don't have the finances
mm-hmm.
to hire the best and brightest. And that's not an insult. It's just literally, it's not a for-profit business.
Right.
And you don't necessarily have to go after talent to run one. You shouldn't, as a nonprofit, need a very advanced accounting person to run your organization or an advanced business person. It helps.
Yeah.
It helps. But at the same time, it nonprofits are very volatile.
Understandable. Okay. And it's very problematical. But there should be some oversight. But we have seen this occur in charity after charity, especially LGBT charities, which I don't get this.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them run on shoestring budgets.
Mm-hmm.
Begging to get grants, begging, you know, the level of drag queen benefits. You know, I really wish one day they build a monument somewhere, maybe in Columbus, of just worn out drag shoes for all these benefits. And then you have people like this and people like others that still even exist and that are allowed to stay in, like, why we tolerate them in the community is beyond me. That steal from that $20 tip that drag queen gets and gives to the nonprofit, that steals from the pay from the checks of this gay household and that gay household.
Again, not all of it is malicious. Some of it is accidental. And it can be as simple as you are the fiduciary of the nonprofit organization, whatever it may be. And it's as simple as you pulled the wrong card out of your wallet.
For $150,000? That's a pause. Lot of mistakes.
Or it's one check. Depending.
Right.
It does happen. It's the same as employees that have access to corporate credit cards. Is sometimes you use the wrong card, write the wrong check. And that's considered like an unintentional oversight. Like it's an irregularity, but it's like just go clean it up and fix it. It's a mistake. Right. You didn't mean to do it. Usually where the problem comes in is sometimes these are nonprofits that become wildly successful that unfortunately have well-intentioned but potentially, I don't want to say greedy. It's not usually where that comes from. It's usually people that are poor. Who, in this experience of running a nonprofit, have been handed large amounts of donations, large grants. And there can sometimes become this moment of no one's going to notice.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, they're going to notice. You're going to get caught. You know, like there's some pretty solid accounting behind nonprofits. It's not an easy place to steal from. Especially if all you're doing is writing checks or running credit cards.
Right.
Again, it's how they caught George Santos is like, it's the directness of it is like, you're not even forming like this conspiracy to steal.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you're sitting over here, and it's just like, and spending money.
Right.
And that's what gets most people caught when they do this. And that's kind of the upside to it, is that it's kind of hard to steal from a nonprofit and get away with it.
Right.
As same as it is for most businesses, and unless you start going a little further down the... Like, this was a very skilled plan.
Right.
And even at that, after a while, it starts to show up.
Right.
Because typically what happens with theft from any business entity, nonprofit or otherwise, is you keep getting bigger and bigger.
Right.
Like, it's $5 today, it's $100 in next month, it's $1,000 next year, it's $20,000 after that, and it escalates up.
Right.
And most people end up with a fair amount of guilt for it.
Right.
Though a lot of them don't actually realize how much they've stolen. Because it ends up being nickel and diming, nickel and diming, nickel and diming.
Right.
And, like, along the way, it's like, well, you know, yeah, I've probably, you know, taken a couple thousand, you know, 50,000. And then they add it up, and usually it's like an order of magnitude.
Right. Which is
bigger
terrible.
Than what they think it is. Because, again, it was a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit over here. And no one noticed and no one's going to notice. And, you know, no one cares. It's not that big a deal. It's not that much money.
Right.
until eventually it's like, that's a pretty sizable hole in our budget. Where did it go?
Exactly.
You know.
All right.
So, I mean, if you're ever working with a nonprofit, always pay attention to your financials, of course. And know that, like, it's very hard to trust people.
Right.
As it should be.
Well, and...
And there's some very good, wonderful people who do wonderful things otherwise that should have never had access to money.
Mm-hmm.
That unfortunately had access to money.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move into looking at some history. I always find this interesting, but now we're starting to see movement in it.
Ooh.
Hadrian's Wall.
Oh, dear. I just closed the wrong tab. Oopsies. Let's get there. All right. So Hadrian's Wall, declared as historic LGBTQ landmark by British Cultural Society. So English Heritage has recognized Hadrian's Wall as a landmark linked to England's queer history, upholding the LGBTQ plus ties to one of the most prominent relics of the Roman Empire. The Romans constructed the stone wall during the second century of the Common Era, approximately 1900 years ago. Spanning 73 miles at its completion, the wall once traveled the entire width of what is now northern England. It is considered to be one of the best preserved artifacts from the time period. English Heritage, a charity that manages over 400 historic monuments in the country, wrote about the landmark significant in a recent email to its membership via the Telegraph to mark the end of Pride Month in the United Kingdom. The organization said that Hadrian's Wall is linked to England's queer history through the Emperor's well-documented history of gay relationships. Hadrian had several male lovers while he was married to his wife Sabina. The most prominent one was Antonius, a younger Greek man who accompanied the emperor on his tours of expansive Roman territories. When Antonius died at the age of 20 by drowning in the River Nile, Hadrian was so heartbroken that he remained in mourning for years, filling his place with statues, his palace with statues that resembled his lost lover, naming stars and flowers after him, and holding festivals and athletic games in his honor. After the death, the emperor also elevated his late lover to the status of a god, erecting temples to him throughout the empire. He also established the city of Antonopolis in his honor. Same-sex relationships were common in ancient Rome, but National Museum's Liverpool still hails Hadrian and Antonius as the most famous homosexual couple in Roman history. In their recent email, English Heritage wrote, "To understand Hadrian's Wall, you have to understand the Roman emperor who built it, his career, his life, and the times in which he lived." Aww.
Yes, it's very nice to start getting some history. Now,
mm-hmm.
We'll see about a few of the kings and see if they actually make notice of that and their, you know, lovers.
Mm-hmm. All exciting things. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Very, very cool.
Now, unfortunately, the curse of the year is upon us.
The curse of the year. Oh, we're jumping over to that unfortunate hour.
Yes.
Oh, we lose an hour of sleep to daylight saving 2024. Here's how to prepare to spring forward overnight. Ready or not, daylight savings time for 2024 is almost here, which means we're set to lose an hour of sleep this weekend. On Sunday, March 10th at 2 a.m., clocks in most of the United States and many other countries move forward 1 hour and stay there for nearly 8 months of daylight savings time. As opposed to falling back in November, where we gain an hour, this time change has us spring forward, which means losing some sleep. As we move our clocks ahead, there's a jolt to the system, Dr. Beth Ann Mallow, a neurology and pediatrics professor at the Vanderbilt University Medical Center, told CBS News. Last spring, explaining this jolt can affect our sleep and overall health. Mm-hmm. Sleep really impacts our health in so many ways. Our weight, our mood, our hearts, our lungs, our brain. That's all affected by good sleep, she says. But there are ways to make the shift less challenging, experts say. Here's how. So actively prepare for the adjustment. Taking steps to prepare for the time change is one way to conquer the daylight saving shift. In the days leading up to time change, try going to bed and waking up a little bit earlier than usual to prepare your body for the hour you will lose, Dr. Charles Seisler, chief of sleep medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital, previously told CBS News. He also suggests avoiding afternoon caffeine and naps during this transition in order to increase your ability to fall asleep at night.
See, daylight savings. Torture.
Yeah, sounds like pure torture. Daylight savings is also the time to prioritize your bedtime. Dr. Aaron Flynn Evans, a sleep expert and consultant to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, told CBS News ahead of last year's shift, our bodies are going to want us to sleep in later relative to the clock after this. So if we don't go to bed early enough to allow for a full night of sleep, we're just going to be sort of chronically sleep deprived on top of the shift that we're experiencing, she says. Bedtime routines are often viewed as being for children, but that adults can benefit too. This week, more than any other, she adds. And it's not just your bedtime routine. Adjusting other daily routines that are time cues for your body, like meal times, for example, can help you get into the new rhythm, the AASM says. Soak in some sunlight. Light is what tells our body clock or circadian rhythm what time it is, Flynn Evans explains. So by maximizing morning light and minimizing evening light, you should help your internal clock better adjust to this disruption that we force on ourselves twice a year. Sleep expert Dr. Shelby Harris recently told CBS New York she advises spending time outdoors the Sunday clocks change. Make sure you go for a gentle walk, do something exercise-wise. It doesn't have to be hardcore, just movement and light exposure, she said. The AASM also suggests heading outdoors for early morning sunlight the week after time change. Don't have time to make it outside? Keep shades and curtains open for some natural morning light the next few days, or get a head start on waking up a bit earlier, Flynn Evans says. And Seisler suggests eating breakfast in front of a window for an extra morning boost.
Congratulations, Devin, for you not having to work tomorrow. You can get a little bit of time in.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. My recommendation is always the same. Why don't we just declare it and we'll split it down the middle? We'll give them 30 minutes. Move the clocks ahead 30 minutes and leave them the fuck there.
Forever.
Forever. No.
There's been multiple pushes. Like, I know that's been one suggestion. Another suggestion has been permanent daylight savings time, because technically we no longer really benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
And just the idea being we keep one or the other, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think I suffer from it quite as much. I mean, I know it occurs. I know that it does, like, kind of glitch me a little.
Right.
But typically it's not, like, end of the world
glitch. Oh, it kills me for a freaking month, and here's why.
Okay.
All of us cannot do it the same.
Okay.
We're changing this Saturday. Poor Hazel doesn't change for two more weeks.
Uh-huh.
Who knows when management changes for either of them, if we're talking Australia or Germany.
Yes.
So we have to have a translator of time.
Around each time change. Understandable. Yeah, so if you are dealing with international business, do keep in mind that the world does not change time on Sunday. Only the U.S.
Exactly.
Only the U.S. Don't, Hazel, if you're watching, don't change your clock. Just
you. No, she won't. She, you know, we will be messaging, I will see you in 2 hours. Okay, see you in 2 hours.
Like, yes.
This is how we'll have to do it for a whole month, is calculate the hours too.
Like, we don't say times, we just say
2 hours.
in 2 hours, we have a show.
Yes.
Oh, goodness. No, but I mean, outside of that, and some of that is also the reason there have been pushes to end time change.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also sometimes the problem with trying to end time change, is that if one part of the world stops doing it, it can actually become more confusing. Because even in the U.S., there are areas of, like, halftime change.
Right.
I know that was always a trip up for me with one of my vendors in a previous job. They were in an area of the U.S. that has a half-hour difference.
Right.
And so it could get very confusing as to what time is it in Indiana.
Right.
Because it's not even the full state of Indiana, it's a portion of it. It's very weird. But no, I think we do go through a lot with, like, the different time zones around the world already. Adding time change and uncoordinated time change, because it's not all happening at once, just makes this situation even more confusing.
I know, right? All right. Yeah. So I think we need to hold Jim Justice upside down and shake his pockets.
Oh, what did poor Jim do? What did Baby Dog let him do?
Well, Baby Dog Lennon is missing $465 million that the federal government potentially may claw back.
She buried it in the backyard. That's what happened. Baby Dog buried it. Just go over to the Greenbrier. It's buried in the backyard.
Well, I find it interesting because they're trying to blame it on schools and schools going to Walmarts to buy hand sanitizer instead of going through the bidding process and all that. That is a lot of goddamn hand sanitizer at 99 cents a bottle.
$465 million at 99 cents a bottle? That's a lot of hand sanitizer. And Clorox wipes in. So potential $465 million federal clawback raises concerns about West Virginia's schools. West Virginia Republican Governor Jim Justice's administration has been characterized by flat budgets and record surpluses that helped cut the state's income tax last year. Now the state could face collateral damage, a possible $465 million clawback of pandemic aid by the U.S. Department of Education. It has thrown the state's budget process into disarray and caused uncertainty in the days before the 60-day legislative session is scheduled to end Saturday, with lawmakers saying they'll pass a skinny budget and reconvene to address unfinished business in May when the financial situation is clearer. It has also reignited old concerns about whether West Virginia, with 1 in 4 children living in poverty, is upholding its constitutional obligation to fund a thorough and efficient system of free schools. Since Justice took office in 2017, he has boasted flat budget after flat budget, which he attributed to conservative management. But the governor, who is now running for U.S. Senator Joe Manchin's seat, was accused at times of underfunding state agencies and intentionally lowballing revenue estimates to create false surpluses. Those surpluses were further bolstered by record severance tax collections, in part because of high energy prices from the war in Ukraine. Kelly Allen, executive director of the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy, was one who expressed skepticism about whether the state could afford a $754 million income tax cut, particularly when a dozen school districts lack social workers and psychologists. Quote, I think there are multiple ways that we could see the state was not giving schools the resources they needed before the feds had to tell us that, Allen said. West Virginia received more than $1 billion in federal aid to help support students during the COVID-19 pandemic. It came with strings. The state needed to keep funding education at the same or a higher level than before the pandemic. In other words, the federal money could supplement existing state investment in education, but not replace it. For federal spending packages passed in 2020 and 2021, that meant a dollar-for-dollar match. For 22 and 23, the federal government examined the percentage of each state's total budget being spent on education. Those regulations were waived for West Virginia in 2022. Whether the state will be approved for 2023 is what's in dispute, echoing challenges in other states as the pandemic aid they've relied on for years disappears. The U.S. Department of Education said it has not contemplated asking West Virginia to return the funds. Justice said his office is negotiating with the federal government and expects a positive resolution very soon, citing funds dedicated to school service and teacher pay raises each year since 2018, when school employees went on strike over conditions in schools. He also said the state has dedicated money to building projects and putting teaching aids in classrooms to improve math and reading skills. The state said it spent $8,464 per K-12 pupil in 2024, compared with $7,510 during Justice's first year as governor in 2017, according to documents submitted to the federal government. But because state spending increased overall from $4.9 billion in 2017 to $6.2 billion in 2023, the percentage marked for education decreased. The key metric eliciting pause from the federal government is an 8% decrease in the education piece of the budget pie from 51% in 2017 to 43% last year. Justice said the feds penalized West Virginia for its economic success, for investing in its tax cut, and for putting surplus money into roads and other infrastructure and projects to attract businesses and create jobs. But West Virginia University College of Law professor Joshua Weishart said the budget numbers call into question whether the state is adequately funding education. The court has interpreted that the funding of our education is supposed to be the state's top priority, its top constitutional priority, he said. It's supposed to be above anything else the state does. West Virginia is one of a minority of U.S. states that pays for education based almost solely on enrollment, which has been declining as the state loses population. Other states allow more funding to be allocated by student need. As part of his negotiations with the federal government, Justice is pushing lawmakers to approve an additional year of 5% pay raises, expected to cost more than $80 million and $150 million for school infrastructure and maintenance. Those raises were promised to school employees by Justice to make up for state health insurance premium increases approved last year. That's a major reason they went on strike in 2018 and 2019, and something Justice promised would not happen on his watch. But Senate Finance Chair Republican Eric Tarr said the state can't afford raises and to continue cutting the income tax, which was slashed around 21% last year, with triggers to continue dropping if the state meets certain revenue thresholds. Tarr is proposing a 4% pay raise that will go into effect only if income tax triggers aren't met, something West Virginia Education Association President Dale Lee said he fears is pitting public employees against the general public. I do think it's incumbent upon them to keep their word given the finances of the state, he said. So this is a numbers game.
Well, I get it, it's a numbers game, but they're saying they spend $940.44 per month on each student.
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah. Per month.
I mean, depending upon what all that money is talking about, if you're talking about the entirety of a student education, if you're, because West Virginia is technically a free school lunch state, right? We're poor enough that the state of West Virginia does free lunch for all public school students. Then you couple that with like the entirety of school education and average it out, it is very possible we're spending that level of money per student per year. Like if you take teacher salaries, all of it.
Right. I'm just looking up something. Oh, that's damn scary.
What?
To put an infant into daycare per month, according to the state, is $728 per month. Mm-hmm. That's an infant.
Mm-hmm.
That only eats formula.
Mm-hmm.
Or breast milk, you know, if you're lucky.
And that's a good number, by the way, for child care.
Okay.
Like, there's a lot of parents that love to spend $700 and some on child care for their infant.
I get
per month. Okay.
Devin, you've raised teenagers. I'm quite sure they eat more than that. They need more. You need more books than that for a middle schooler. For an elementary student, they spend more than another $228 on crayons. That's insane. That's insane.
I mean, but again, because the whole problem here, it's twofold. One, West Virginia allocates money per student, and does it across the board. Like, every student, quote unquote, gets blah, blah, blah money per of services per year.
Right.
And then, so if a school has 100 kids, they get that number times 100 to run their school. Good luck.
Right.
Enjoy. This is your budget.
Compared to the national average, West Virginia is short each month $289.55 per student. That's the problem the federal government is having.
Right. Well, the federal government's having, I think, with the numbers, two issues.
Right.
Because what's technically happened in West Virginia is while we have increased spending,
right,
they're looking at it as a percentage of budget, not as a actual number.
Right. But I'm saying if we look at the average within the United States that everybody else is spending on their kids and all 49 other states, including Alaska, West Virginia is short, spending $289.55 that we're setting on a rainy day fund of almost $2 billion. That is the less quality education our students are getting.
Well, now here's the thing that does get argued is whether or not it's a lower quality education.
Right.
Because fundamentally what we're doing is the reason that teachers keep striking in West Virginia over pay is because we don't pay them nearly enough.
We don't.
And a lot of this has to do with the way we allocate money to our school systems.
Right.
Is that you have some school systems like, say, Charleston, that can have huge schools, full of students, overpacked classrooms, and I'm sure they're running it like a meat processing plant.
Right.
Because the more warm butts and seats they have, the more money they have to do things.
Right.
So if they can get 40, 50 students into a classroom, they're doing it.
Right.
Versus you have other areas of West Virginia that it's a tiny community. Okay. There's not that many people.
Right.
There are not that many kids. You're looking at like a 2025 student classroom and it may be a limited grade range. Like it's a primary school.
Right.
So while it's also a smaller building, it has even fewer students than average. So now they have an even smaller budget to work with. But fundamentally, a large number of the expenses are going to be about the same.
Right.
So it becomes a real struggle for smaller schools to offer all the same things. So what fundamentally happens is you may have certain schools in the state that are amazing. They offer everything, huge class size, but offer everything. You have school counselors, you have psychiatrists, you have everything you need, and they have the budget to attract really good talent.
Right, but even when we get to technology, I mean, we brought computers out of the desert for some students. Pardon? When the pandemic hit.
Oh, yeah, people were hauling computers out of basements and just, yeah.
Yeah, everything.
Like, the things that showed up at my door.
But the point being is...
Well, because there was a scramble and prices jumped, and then there were marketing or market concerns. All of this was all going on at the same time.
Right.
So suddenly the Walmart $2.99 special was sold out,
mm-hmm.
became the $3.99 special and sold out, right. And then became the $4.99 special and was so back ordered you couldn't even think about getting one.
But these schools couldn't even distribute computers. With $465 million, they could not distribute computers. You're telling me Dell wouldn't have went in overtime?
They did. The problem was we had an entire world shutdown happening.
I get that.
And when we look at most companies since roughly the 80s,
mm-hmm.
Most are running under just-in-time inventory.
Right.
Which the pandemic made clear has flaws in it.
Right.
At least in terms of how people understanding it. This all goes back to Toyota in the 70s, I think. Don't quote me on that. But the whole concept was, and people miss one vital part of.
Right.
Just-in-time inventory isn't all that is.
Right.
It's having predictable inventory that you right. do not hold in reserve, because you should have a reserve.
Right.
More than you need.
Right.
Like, you don't go out and buy millions and millions and millions of parts if you're going to only use, like, 200,000 a month.
Right.
Like, create a buffer, but don't get crazy.
Right.
You know, just because you get a deal, don't buy a million of them.
Right.
Which, kind of a, you know, different thought for manufacturing that used to just spit out and spit out and spit out and didn't care.
Right.
And so you end up with a lot of stuff that can become obsolete, get damaged, just whatever, before it can ever be consumed.
Right.
That's the concept that was supposed to be in play.
Mm-hmm.
What companies took from it was only order enough to do what you're immediately doing. And so companies all around the world in manufacturing were basically expecting like near daily delivery of what they needed.
Right.
Or weekly or monthly. So the minute that first shutdown happened, and things stopped flowing,
mm-hmm.
these companies were idle. They didn't have anything they needed. Like, even as other companies and other countries and shipping starts to come back up and logistics starts to come back up,
mm-hmm.
sometimes they were out for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, when you have a company like Dell that functions this way, because they do,
mm-hmm.
That has a sudden surge in demand that wasn't predicted.
Right.
They can't, the problem becomes they're trying to sell things they can't make because they don't have parts for. So they back order that people need immediately. Mm-hmm. So they cancel and go somewhere else. But then there's even more customers right behind them. And so the system just sits there in permanent stagnant.
Well, and I get that, but at the same time, mm-hmm. there was no reason for our educational system to be so far in the fucking Stone Age that they couldn't have switched to Zoom in 2 minutes. We switched to Zoom classes within a month.
Mm-hmm. Like, we changed over very quickly and easily, and we very much lucked up on it. But if you'll remember, it was a struggle coming up with another camera.
Right.
Like, it took us, and we paid an ungodly amount for it.
Like, $68.
No, that's the original price.
No, $35 was the original.
Okay, yeah, so we paid double for it.
Right.
Maybe a little more. I thought it was like 75 or 80.
Mm-mm.
But anyway, we paid, like, if we'd bought it like 2 months before,
mm-hmm.
it would have been cheap.
Right.
Just to turn around. And again, it was a demand item. Everyone needed a webcam.
Right.
You can't buy it at Walmart. You can't buy it at Sam's. You can't buy it at Best Buy. No one has it.
Right.
So literally you look on Amazon, mm-hmm. which is what we did. That's how we bought it.
Right.
And I think we went through, like, because I kept asking you, do you want to get this one? And before I could click it
mm-hmm.
and get it in my cart and pay, it sold out.
Right.
It's gone. Doesn't exist. Product's dead.
Right.
Like, as in the product page, dead.
Right.
Like, minutes. And that was a large part of my experience during that time. Like, because I had some parents that were looking for computers and equipment and needing computer repairs. I had businesses trying to go mobile or work from home, trying to buy computers. And I'm just sitting here having to tell people, I can quote you all day long, and I will. Because when I send this to you, pull your credit card out and buy it. Just don't even look.
Right.
Like, that was the level it was at, because I was dealing with companies that usually had, like, a slower turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thank you for your recommendation. We'll take that in consideration. We have a meeting on Friday, like it's Tuesday. We have a meeting on Friday. We'll discuss it and, you know, get the budget allocation.
Right.
And it's like, no, we're beyond that.
Right.
If you want computers
mm-hmm.
this year, you need right. to have a pre-authorization to spend whatever it takes, because this is only going to get worse.
Right.
And it's what happened. And by the time, like, I had one client, the original quote for a computer, because they needed six of them, I think the original quote was like $1,100 for systems, and I sent to them. By the time they purchased,
mm-hmm.
we spent over $3,000 per system.
Right.
Like, I was just sitting here, like, about ready to have a meltdown, because I'm like, there's no way in hell we just did that.
Right.
Because, they're not paying me for them. This is a service I offer as part of my business, is, hi, tell me what you're looking to do. I'll send you a quote for the equipment you need. And it's a direct purchase.
Right.
Like, I don't make any money off this.
Right.
Or generally. You know, like, I'll send you quotes. I don't care.
Yeah.
Not to the point it keeps me from doing anything else. But, you know, in this instance, it was one of those, this is a really good client. I don't care. I'm yeah. not charging you for that.
Right.
But it ended up being that I had to keep doing it.
Right.
And finally got to a point, I had a conversation with him. It's like, no, you don't understand. Like, we can't go normal process here.
Right.
Or this is going to end up costing you $10,000.
Right.
Per system. And it's like, okay. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm freaked out too. So, but yeah, no. It was a wild period. I had never gone through anything like that. I've never seen anything like that in tech.
Right.
But it is where a lot of companies ended up. And it did teach us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
About like, universally, everyone got an MBA in that one, at least from understanding how just-in-time inventory doesn't work,
right,
and all the cases that it's a problem. And so no, a large part of what we've seen, and this all kind of ties back to the West Virginia education system and most schools, there has been a very glacial move over the years towards more online classes and more online components to classes. And most of it has been through education ad hoc.
Right. And being that with the cheapest, most cryptic, most old age, like most computers were so new they wouldn't even run the system.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people are dragging stuff out of their basements.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bottom line pricing. And I'm like, are you serious? This is what my tax dollars are being spent on.
Well, but then you also have to look back a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
Because computers in the classroom, way back when, had a lot of challenges and issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I struggle to really fault education systems for their tech buy.
Right.
And here's why. That if you look back historically, there have been a number of school systems that have dumped millions into tech for the classroom.
Right.
The Apple IIe's, the IBM PC Juniors, mass education contracts with Apple for everything from, you know, the Mac Classic and Mac SE all the way up to the iMac.
Right.
And what's fundamentally happened is they've been overcharged.
Right.
And given technology without resources.
Right.
As in, typically what's happened is these school systems, by the time they get everything up and running to support these systems and get everyone educated in how to use these systems, we're talking 4 or 5 years.
Right.
That this thing's set on a desk in a box
or
under a desk or in a closet or in a warehouse gathering dust.
Right.
And by the time it actually gets deployed, it's not technology. It's not cutting edge. It's no one's learning anything new. So a lot of the systems that we have or a lot of the software we have for education kind of gets developed in a way that we don't expect much.
Right. Well, again, I think it's stupid. I also think that we need to shank Jim Justice because, oh, I wonder how much his taxes were that suddenly got paid, if y'all remember, during this time.
Oh, yeah. That was wild.
Yeah. You know, and all these other financial difficulties our state is going through. Has anyone driven in the state of West Virginia? Spent so much on roads. What roads? I've been all over the state. Where's the new roads?
Mm-hmm.
And all cities tore up. Both interstates look like they're freaking flyer sites. More potholes than potheads.
Which is a good ratio to have.
Yeah.
You should have more potholes than potheads. Like, that's helpful. I'm just saying.
No. All right. So let's get over to Are You an Asshole?
Oh, all right. Am I the asshole? This comes from you, by the way. I did not pick this guy.
Yes, I picked this one.
Yeah, he's been excited for this one. Am I the asshole for not disclosing my will? I, 58 male, was recently diagnosed with a terminal condition. Won't get into details, but it was the classical went in with a paper cut, got out with, and I'm quoting the article, AIDS Cancer 2000 situation. I've got roughly a year and a half left. Over time, I've made a bunch of unwise decisions. I have multiple children with different women. I have 3 sons, Lance, 43 male, who has 2 daughters, Mark, 22 male, and Tony, 15 male, and 4 daughters, Cammie, 38 female, who has 4 children, Linda, 30 female, Ronnie, 28 female, and Kathy, 24 female. Not going to lie here, I'll just say that I was only involved in raising Ronnie and Kathy. Their mom died when they were little, and I couldn't refuse to take them in. Ronnie is starting her career in law, and Kathy recently got her degree in agriculture. 9 years ago, I also took in Mark, who was kicked out by a shitty stepdad. Mark decided against pursuing higher education. I own a ranch. It's not a little one, though we're managing just fine with the help of hired staff. We have about 500 heads of cattle and not counting the horses. The ranch has been in my family for generations. I know for certain that the only children who would be interested in preserving the ranch are Kathy and Mark. Maybe it's just my delusion of grandeur, but I'm very passionate about passing the ranch down to my children, so they'll be able to continue the family tradition. Knowing my children and knowing that they probably inherited my amazing personality, I can say for sure that the second I draw my last breath, there will be an inheritance war vicious enough to make Middle East and Eastern Europe seem like a recess fight in kindergarten. It will be nasty, painful, and disgusting. I wrote a will. Per my will, the ranch will go to Kathy and Mark, 50-50, including all the machines, trucks, other equipment, financial assets. Ronnie, the executor of the will, is getting my 1970s Lincoln Continental. She's the one who's driving the car for the last 5 years, and she's the one paying for maintenance, insurance, everything. The other children get $10,000 each, and Tony gets my car. A 2010 Chevy Suburban, purely because it's a safe car and he's getting his license this year. The grandkids also get $5,000 each. It's not much, but I don't own much either. I've notified my children that I don't have much time left. Of course, they asked to see the will. I know that the second they see it, the shit will hit the fan and things will escalate. I don't want it. I don't want to spend my final year seeing my children suffer and fight. Ronnie advised me against disclosing the will. She's a skilled lawyer, so I trust her completely. I refused to disclose the will, and now my children are enraged. They keep speculating about the will. They keep pestering me and giving advice on what I should leave to whom. Am I the asshole for refusing to disclose the contents of my will? By now, the only ones who know about them are me and Ronnie, and I intend to keep it this way.
Not the asshole.
Okay.
What's your thoughts?
Oh. Here's my thing. I don't think he's the asshole. I firmly believe it's your money. You do with it as you want to. However you want to divide your estate is however you want to divide your estate. I do find it unfortunate. Mm-hmm. In any situation where you kind of already know you're going to start a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And create a bunch of drama and cause a bunch of issues and potentially leave these people
mm-hmm.
at each other's throats.
Right.
I struggle with that.
Right.
Because I do think sometimes the right thing to do in some families is to just sell it all.
Mm-hmm.
Just lock, stock, and both barrels. Sell it all. Divide the number equally.
Mm-hmm.
And be done with it.
Right.
And just, we're not having this fight.
Right.
Because this does, unfortunately, create... an inequality in most likely what they're actually getting each.
But they're making the choice each to get that inequality. And here's what I mean by that. They're not interested in the family business.
Most of them, right.
Personally, I would create that into an N Corp, making the Mark and Katie or Kathy or whatever her name is.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other option is... put it all in trust.
Mm-hmm.
Make each one a shareholder of a percentage.
Right.
And then the years that the trust makes money,
mm-hmm.
you get a payout.
Right.
And when it doesn't, well, that sucks.
Right.
So I don't think you're wrong or the asshole for not showing your will or wanting to be involved in this crap.
Right.
I just hate when this happens to families, and I hate that families are like this. Right. And if you're watching this, I really do also want to say that I think it's horrible that children or anyone right. who is thinking they're going to be inheriting. So to, as my grandmother would say, makes designs on it.
Right.
Because that's not your money. That is not your place to be telling people what to right. give to who and how and when and why and for what reason. And stay out of it. If you inherit, be happy with whatever you are the beneficiary of. As long as it's, as long as you are confident that the person meant to do that.
You're right.
Like, I'm not against suing over a will.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that it was signed inappropriately.
Right.
That said, otherwise, whatever you get is whatever you get.
Right.
And you shouldn't expect.
Right.
Like, I look at bequest in the same thought line as gift.
Right.
No one owes you a gift.
Right.
No one owes you an inheritance.
Right.
So trying to force someone's hand or get mad about it, especially before it happens.
Right.
Seems a bit ridiculous.
Right.
To me. So I urge people, if you think you are the recipient of something in a will, to sit down, shut up, right. and be grateful for what you get.
Right.
If that's anything at all. I don't know what else to say there. I think that's the biggest problem here. But I'm going to go with not the asshole.
Okay. All right. So over to relationship advice.
Yes.
Now, this one does not a poly one. We normally do poly, but poly, you suck this week.
Oh, well, there you go. Oh, wow. So husband, male 36, gave me, female 34, a year to lose weight, fix our dead bedroom situation, and get better mentally, or he will leave. How do I handle this? We have been suffering from dead bedroom for a few years. I'm also in depression. My mental health is not good. I'm also overweight and gained quite a bit over the years. Well, we've went through two rough months recently, and he gave me an ultimatum. He is giving me 1 year to fix all of this, or he says he also deserves happiness with someone who loves him, etc. I understand his intentions, but I can't seem to shake the feeling that putting all responsibility to me is not right. Also, if he decides to leave, the blame can be put on me in an instant. I am already having so many mental issues and medicated with self-esteem, fear of loneliness, trust issues, etc., and this ultimatum is not helping me with those. I'm not sure what to do. Of course I want to lose weight, work on myself and relationship, but I feel really uncomfortable with this ultimatum.
Serving divorce papers.
Yeah, you're done.
You're done.
You're done. That's not an ultimatum you should ever give, and that is not an ultimatum you should ever receive.
Right.
Because fundamentally, I think OP is exactly right that you dumped all the responsibility for the problems in your relationship on one person.
Right.
That's kind of rare.
Right.
That's even truthful.
Right.
I mean, there are situations that occur, don't get me wrong. But for the most part, relationships are a two-party deal. Also, trying to set a one-year time limit to lose weight,
mm-hmm.
fix a dead bedroom, and get better mentally.
Yeah, not happening. Serving divorce papers.
I'm just sitting here going, was there anything else you wanted? You know, do you want a winning lottery ticket with it?
Right.
Like, I'm afraid that's where I would have been at if I were her, would be looking at him like, you want a winning lottery ticket too? Go fuck yourself.
Right. Well, here's my issues starting at. One, dead room bedrooms, both your faults. Not just one.
Well, theoretically, that can be a one-sided situation, especially if someone's having self-esteem issues.
Again.
Yeah. But fair enough.
Both issue. It's an issue jointly. So you both have to work on it. Lose weight. You have to lose weight for yourself. You can't lose weight for anybody else or any goddamn thing else. No, but that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Okay, that shouldn't even go into the equation. Mental health, you can't get help unless you want it. This has been proven. Forced therapy doesn't work.
No, and more importantly, sometimes better mentally isn't better.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there, like, if you think you're going to cure mental illness,
mm-hmm.
And the issues that are there in a year,
right?
That's a tall order,
right?
It doesn't mean that mental illness never gets better, or that in a year it can't be better than it is,
right?
But if you're looking for mental illness all gone, cured it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's a tall order and very rare.
Right.
And quite frankly, unreasonable to ask anyone to just get better.
Right.
And quite frankly, it sounds like there are so many things wrong here to get to that ultimatum.
Right.
I think fundamentally, like, you're done.
Yeah.
Just sign, like, get the divorce lawyer, get it over with.
Right.
And I think this may be one of those situations where the divorce is losing weight, better mental health, and fixes the dead bedroom situation.
Exactly.
Because I think as two people in a relationship, and without, like, directly assigning blame to either one of you, so we'll do it equally.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a relationship where the problems in it are the relationship.
Right.
So get rid of the relationship.
You'll feel much better.
You may see some massive, quick improvement.
Yeah, and I find it amazing when people get out of relationships, they drop like 236 pounds in a few months.
And then a few months later,
meet a wonderful person.
You know, and lose another 50 or so.
Exactly.
And there's a fair number of relationships there, and sometimes you really can just look at a couple and tell their marriage is gone to hell.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, I'm not saying that every person who's overweight and has bad mental health is in a dead bedroom marriage and their marriage is just a pure nightmare. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that sometimes in addition to what you see out of the couple, it's like, oh, this has gone to hell.
Right.
Like the best thing, the most loving, kind, sweet thing you can do for each other
mm-hmm.
is file for divorce. Because right now you're just kind of locked into a War of the Roses and it ain't going well.
Right.
Like, if you, like, y'all took Till Death Do Us Part a little too seriously, right. And y'all about to kill each other.
Right.
Maybe not with guns or knives or choking or anything else violent.
Right.
But just the sheer unhappiness.
Right.
Is taking its toll.
Right.
And again, I've seen people that I've kind of looked at and been like, that marriage has gone to hell.
Right.
Like, sometimes it's little things, but sometimes it is just looking at someone going, this has got to be garbage.
Right.
Like, if it's not your marriage, it's something major in your life. Like, it's either marriage, career, or damn, how high is that credit card debt?
Right.
Like, what happened? Where's your trauma? Put show me on the doll where they hurt you.
Right.
So, yeah. Good luck.
Again, serve him a divorce paper.
Mm-hmm. So the comments, the edit, is thank you all for your comments. I realized I'm looking at things from the wrong window. I need to give him the credit. He has been very communicative about our problems before. So this kind of last resort for him. I genuinely believe he wants to give us a second shot and not mean this as a threat. So now the ball is in my court and I need to get up and do something about it.
Boo.
No!
The only thing you need to be doing is calling a lawyer.
Call a divorce attorney. Please call a divorce attorney. Oh my God, do not double down.
And see, don't get along with a lot of the Redditors here. It's because they're in this idea that divorce is evil. No, sometimes it's freedom.
Yeah. Well, divorce can correct a lot of things. Now, do I think some people rush to divorce over petty things they can easily work out in counseling? I do. I think some people get married too early and they're too young and they're too strong-headed.
Right.
To understand that there's compromise in relationships, and if you're not doing it,
right.
Then yeah, it's going to be real shit with this person and the next person and the person after that till you get it.
Right.
So I don't always think divorce is the answer.
Right.
But I think in this situation, at the point in which you can level that kind of ultimatum, you are at least with someone who's off, that gives you that ultimatum, who just doesn't care anymore.
Right.
Like, to look at you and say those words. I'm sorry, you can't care about me anymore.
Right.
You care about you and what you want and fitting me into the box of who you think I ought to be.
Right.
To be your spouse.
Right.
And it's like, no, you're done.
No.
Okay, so Devin's, well, okay, let's get Brenda's comment first, because that's for the am I the asshole. They asked to see the will. Rude. You don't owe anyone anything. You worked for it.
Right.
Exactly. So then Devin says, I've been divorced. It was a terrible marriage. He was an alcoholic and a total asshole. It was freedom for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always look at the end of a relationship as the beginning, not the end.
Right.
Because if we're at the point in which we're breaking up, like it, anyone I've been with, if we're at the point we're breaking up, then that means I'm now free to go find who I'm supposed to be with or do what I'm supposed to do. Because apparently it doesn't involve you.
Right.
So there's always a next.
Right. But at the same point, I would tell you, and you've said some things to me, especially this morning, you said some things to me.
Now listen here. You deserved it. But go ahead.
You ever say lose weight, blah, 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 blah. Bye. I have a new morning room.
Actually, I have said some things about your weight loss. And what have they been?
If you want to do it for yourself.
Is always my response.
Yes.
Like, because you often frame it in terms of I'm losing weight for you.
Right.
And I'm like, no, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you think you're doing.
I banter at you that way, but you know.
I know. Yeah. But it's why I respond the way I do, is because if that's what you think you're doing, that's not how this works.
Right.
No way in hell is any part of our relationship codependent upon you lose 5 pounds.
Right.
Ever. I will not put that on you.
Right. But at the same time, and the point being is, If you were that asshole, you'd be out the door.
Oh, yeah.
Quickly.
As I should be.
Yes.
But no, I mean, it's. And I try to be really careful with that because I know that I've had things said to me before that were like, huh? In other relationships and situations.
Right.
And there's some moments there with that that it's like, that's not how that works. Like, Brenda says he's losing weight for you, Joe. He wants to live longer to torment you longer, as he did this morning. Though he got his just desserts. Like, I think I handled myself quite well this morning.
Well played, well played. Of course, I think I handled that real well myself.
That was just cruel.
It was
Like, I
not.
could get you for cruelty on that statement.
I said, I've said worse to you.
Okay, so we just got to tell the story. So I was getting ready to leave this morning. And I was very proud of myself. I woke up late. It was a long night, all these things. And so I'm doing the last minute, like I'm last minuting to get out the door this morning for my massage therapy appointment. So I got my shower done. I'm all excited because I still have time left. And I was like, yay, it's, like I was done in 21 minutes. And you just had to point out the extra 3 minutes it took me to get dressed. And I said, well, sorry, I had to look for clothes. And so then you apologize for the fact that I had to look for clothes. And I'm like, why are you sorry about that? He says, well, if I were a better husband, I would have laid out clothes for you. Maybe
That's
your
not
next
that bad. I said, well,
well,
maybe your
but well,
next time.
whatever, you got to your maybe your next husband will lay your clothes out for you. So I jokingly said, no, I'm pretty sure the next husband I'm marrying for money. And you said,
Jokingly, I think that time has passed.
now, of course, I was offended by his insinuation that I am too whatever to get a sugar daddy. And so I just and walked out of the bedroom, at which point he starts to protest the fact that I have not asked him if I need to get anything while I'm out. I have not kissed him goodbye. I have done none of the normal things I do before leaving the house. So I did turn around to go back and kiss him with the words, "Eat shit and die, trash," and left. I think I was justified.
No, you ain't.
Y'all should see the look on his face, is all I got to say.
It's all right. That's all right.
I think I'm justified on that one.
And I clarified what I was referring to.
Oh, I don't think I was listening for the justification.
I said you chose to get a degree instead.
That's true. That's true. I did have the offer that I quit school and become a houseboy. Though that was going to be more of a sweet and low daddy. And I'm like, my degree is going to be worth more. Plus, I hate ironing, and that was the thing that really clenched it for me was he wanted ironed shirts.
Oh, please, he used a cleaner.
No, he actually expected me to do it. I'm like, oh hell no.
I don't even expect you to cook my steak, and it's the quickest thing you can cook for me.
Fair enough. Oh, but anywho. I did put love you at the end of it if it helps anyone decide whether or not I'm a horrible person.
You're not a horrible person. I just know how to deliver sometimes.
Do what now?
I know how to just slip those in there.
I know, but I think I delivered quite nicely in return. Like, I returned that serve.
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. You're a little low.
Fair enough. I mean, the thought that went through my mind was, what would Blanche Devereaux do? So I quoted her.
The Navy isn't in town this week.
Okay, so I should be more specific. What would Blanche Devereaux say?
Again, the Navy's not in town this week.
Brenda says we're cute. You gotta keep it interesting. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. All right, so let's see if you're the asshole this week.
Am I the asshole?
No, you are not the asshole.
Woohoo!
Will should be confidential until after death and possibly 30 days later. Make sure everyone has time to get bail money.
And at least get through the funeral without a fight.
And bail money.
Okay, fair enough. But yes. All right.
All righty, guys. So I'm going to be on this weekend, hopefully. No special sales, just my normal. And we will see you on Sunday. Take it away.
All right. So, of course, we want to thank Beverly Walker, Mika G, Kathy, Mary Winfield, Brenda, Shannon C, Shannon D, Lady Gwendolyn, Charles Shaw, Tracy Van, Caitlin Bell, and Devin. If you'd like to learn more about us, the show, or how you, too, can become a Patreon sponsor and receive all the wonderful benefits our baristas receive, please visit us at PCSPnetwork.com.
Good night, y'all.
Good night.